Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and you're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. This evening, we are going to have ourselves another wonderful conversation. And I'm inviting you to join in on the conversation. I'm inviting you to join in on the conversation early. Because we're going to take on a topic, one which has been discussed frequently, and in recent times, it has been discussed significantly and broadly by everyone. So I believe that I should at least have a chance to take a bite at this particular cherry. And this is something that I've discussed before. But maybe this evening, we want to look at it from a slightly different perspective. To kind of rethink and ask ourselves some introspective and reflecting questions. Why exactly are we at the place that we are currently? Why exactly is there inertia on this very important emotive issue? Why is it that there isn't a sense of broad consensus? And why is it in the face of a lack of pushback? So no one is generally disagreeing with the underlying potential impact, the underlying potential vagaries of the existence of this thing. But still, there isn't the groundswell for a change. Why is this so? And we also need to extend the conversation to the point where, while we always, or not always, but often have discussion in this myopic fashion and we limit it to the borders of the Bahamas, we must come to the realization that in this instance, the Bahamas is by no means unique. There are many others out there who are in the same place. But for the time being, because we are where we are, and we are confronted by the issues that we are dealing with here, we'll then focus on the issues in front of us. And we leave the rest of the borders. We just simply use that for context. But why, pray tell, listener, given the consistency, given the incessant discussion over the many years, given the nod that this issue has gotten from leaders at the highest level, given the recent result where we see in Parliament for may be the first time the largest number of female actors, both in Parliament and Cabinet. Why isn't there greater movement and greater traction on this issue of marital rape? That's what I want to talk about today. I want us to take a very slow stroll down the road of considering whether or not there is a different perspective. I know, you know, one could say that there is a secular perspective which is informed by the general religion or religious environment which we are in. On another hand, there is a religious perspective which is hardened by a belief informed by this idea of man and woman coming together and becoming one, one flesh. Then there is the reality of the law itself, the act itself, the section which totally provides or gives an exclusion, an exemption on the outcome of any act which meets or could meet the standard for rape. Totally excludes it, and we will look at what the act says in totality. But is there a slightly different perspective to take? This conversation started again when recently there was a ruling for a divorce action. And in that, the woman stated in her representation that she felt as if she was a victim of rape over the course of the marriage, or at least at some portions, I would guess, at some point after. You know, there must have been some blissful moments up front, I would assume. In reading the ruling, one walks away with the impression that the male involved was a churchman, an individual who really believed in the church. I don't know whether it was an individual who holds a position in the church, maybe a deacon. I don't know exactly. That wasn't stated. But you get the impression that this individual was a big believer in the church, because one of the points he put forward, seeking to make the argument that this woman had exerted cruelty on him, was the fact that she didn't go to church regularly. So he had a sense of means to be a regular church attendee, to go to church, to be a participant, and so on and so forth, because he saw that, or he saw her withdrawal, her refusal to be actively a part of the church, as being wicked and cruel. The wicked is my word, but it was cruelty, which is one of the grounds for divorce, which actually is the grounds which the judge ruled on. But in this ruling, at the end of the day, the judge effectively said, I've listened to all the representation you have made, lady, and I empathize with it. These are my words. I agree that what you have described represents cruelty. And I agree also on the basis taken into consideration the responses and the general mannerism of your spouse. He didn't deny it. So clearly, this is a basis for divorce. However, very importantly, and I don't know that the judge really had to do that, because she didn't say that she was raped per se. She felt like a rape victim. And, you know, for persons who are in the business of wordsmithing, you could, you could make an argument that that wasn't the point that she was making. She kind of said something else. But also, as a pro to that argument, you would make the argument that she felt that at some point in time, at least, she was raped and that continued. Or at least the feelings associated with that continued over the currency of the marriage. The judge gave the judgment in her favor, or gave the judgment for the dissolution of the marriage. The process started. But she took time to, because that was noted, this whole issue of being a rigged victim, she took time to note that, look, the courts, the judiciary, cannot give that or use rape as a basis for a divorce because the law does not allow that. I believe that the judge, recognizing the social environment that we're in, recognizing that this issue is being discussed, and being a woman herself, the import of the matter which was before her, took time out to delineate her points, because I think she wanted to send a message. Now, on one hand, she did what she had to do as a judge, as a part of the judiciary. She had to make a decision, come to a conclusion based on the prevailing law. And she did exactly that. But the commentary that she outlined before drawing the conclusion, I think is important and should not be ignored in this whole transaction. Because the reason it is, it would seem to me from a layman perspective, that had there not been this exclusion in the act, this exclusion in the definition of rape, while I can't be sure that the judge would have given the dissolution on that basis, her narrative would have gone differently. And by and large, based on the representation of the male, maybe is criminal exposure would have been different, would have increased. Maybe he would be on trial now for a different, well, he's not on trial, I don't consider, but he may have some criminal obligations to answer to, all things considered. So where are we right now as a country dealing with this particular matter? I want to shift our minds away from the piece of legislation, even though we are going to talk about it. I want us to shift our minds away from what you might believe at the end of the day is a religious obligation. We'll come back to that. And I want you to train your mind on, for the moment, the Constitution. And I want you to really become clinically focused on the fact that we are not talking about man or woman, but in the strictest sense, we're going to have a conversation about human beings. And because we are talking about human beings and we are talking about the Constitution, we are naturally going to be exploring the human rights which have been accorded at national and international levels. So, what is the first thing that we need to look at? Chapter 3 of the Bahamas Constitution, the Bahamian Constitution, talks about the protection of fundamental rights and freedom of the individual. If you go to, I think this would be Section 15, it reads, whereas every person in the Bahamas is entitled to the fundamental rights and freedoms of the individual, that is to say, has the right, whatever his race, place of origin, political opinions, color, creed, or sex, but subject to respect for the rights and freedom of others, for the public interest, to each and all of the following, namely, and it lists some items A to C, but I'm only going to be focusing on A, namely life, liberty, security of the person, and the protection of the law. Let me read that again. Life, liberty, security, protection of the law. The last one is the point I want to drive home. The Constitution, under the banner of the protection of the fundamental rights and freedom of the individual, says every single individual has a right to the protection of the law. Now, I know an argument can be made. The law is the law. The parliament is sovereign, and when it makes the law, we have to obey it, and so on and so forth. But just work with me for a second. From a human perspective, you are a male. I want you to think about this in terms of your female family, yeah? And if you're a female, I want you to think about this in terms of your male family. The fact that in a spousal arrangement, in a marriage, the spouse is technically being discriminated against by this piece of legislation from the point of view that any person out there who is unmarried. So let's say two persons living together, nice and cool, they're not married, common law marriage, and the man decide, well, you know, he's going to, or the woman decide, she's going to do some things without the consent. That can constitute, but the moment they become married, the moment they are married, it changes. I believe, and I would argue on the basis that that exclusion represents a discrimination, because between two classes of people, remember it says, I know that it didn't use the term marriage, but I think in essence, when you talk about origin and race and color and creed and sex and all of that, we could squeeze that in there somewhere. The discrimination is on the basis of you deciding to get married. And there's some place where I have some information that we get to that, which shows that that can be squeezed in there. And so I believe that from a constitutional perspective, the fact that this portion of the legislation, and I'm going to get to it shortly, because the legislation creates this exemption, it creates this level of discrimination. I believe so. I believe that if we stop to ask or start asking the question from a different perspective, if we do not look at it through the lens of, you know, where some people would argue that, hey, you know, this is a holy relationship, this is a holy union, and no man is supposed to get involved, yada, 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 that sort of thing. If we put that aside and we look at it strictly through the lens of the individual, human right, male or female, I know that in most instances it's a female who is the party being afflicted. It could happen. It says spouse. It's totally gender neutral. So here is what the law says, the Bohemian law says, as it relates to rape. Rape is an act. Rape is the act of any person. Rape is the act of any person under 14 years of age, not under 14 years of age, having sexual intercourse with another who is not his spouse without the consent of that other person. B, without consent which has been extorted by threats or fear of bodily harm, with consent obtained by personating the spouse of that other person, with consent obtained by false and fraudulent representation as to the nature and the quality of the act. So there are a number of things happening here. First of all, if you're under 14, there's not going to be the situation of rape. Those persons are regarded as young in the face of the law, and there is a different treatment there. But as long as you're over that and you do any of these things, it's going to be rape. You know, so like D, which talks about the nature and the quality of the act. So if a woman went to the doctor and the doctor said to the woman, look, you know, if I do certain things to you, it's going to cure you, and misrepresentation, it obviously would be. Most person wouldn't be naive enough to believe that. But let's say in a world where, you know, he pulls one over and performs the act. So the nature and the quality of the act is certainly not what it is, what it ought to be, because he is doing it for his own pleasure, while she is there thinking that this is going to cause a change in her medical circumstances. That would then constitute rape. If you decide to come in and pretend that you are the spouse of the individual, then, and the person is so fooled, and then you carry out the act, that would constitute rape. If you do it without consent of the person, clearly straight up, or without consent which has been extorted by threat. So if you pull out your weapon and put it at the person's head, and the person says, okay, don't kill me, just go ahead, that wouldn't be consent, and it would constitute rape. But this line expressly says, this portion of the section expressly says, intercourse with another person is not his spouse. And it uses the male gender here, but it's supposed to be read his or her, male or female. So the issue at play here is that this exemption is being given up. It's been provided by the law. And if we make the argument, you know, and I know I'm going out on a limb here in some of these things, you know, there are, you know, brilliant legal minds out there who may be able to shut me down in a couple of seconds. But I believe I want to go there. I believe I want to take the risk and step out on the limb. Because if we agree that there is a constitutional right for protection for the individual, and the way that particular section of the act is styled takes away that protection of the law. If you think about it, a man is proven, let's use man, it's easier. A man is proven just based on all the acts done to have fulfilled the requirement for rape, except that he is the spouse. In a way, that is almost state protection. Or if you want to look at it in a different way, it's tantamount to state abuse of the victim. State facilitated, at least. Because here it is that the past legislation in Parliament gives the individual, because he is a spouse or she is a spouse, on that basis, gives that individual a pass. That is, in my mind, and I'm open to discussion, I'm open to be told that I'm wrong, I'm cool with that, but I believe that it can be argued in 2022, we're not in 1970, we're not in 1973, but in 2022, when the sensibility of the world is different, When we see and we talk about things like the Green Movement and Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement, when we see this movement of gender equality and gender equity in this day, today, on today, when we read that particular section of the legislation, and when we put that against the backdrop of what the Constitution calls for, there is no question in my mind that thinking individual, reasonable and objective individual would say there is a facilitation taking place here, maybe unwittingly, but it is. And the fact that this can be assessed and analyzed, and I think have done so over a long period of time with no change, raises some questions, raises some really important and fundamental question about how to go about dealing with the whole idea of fulfilling its obligation in protecting the human rights of victims in spousal abuse, spousal rape. That's something to think about. Just slightly different perspective. Not the usual thing that we always talk about. Let's look at it from the Constitution. And then let's look at it also from the perspective of other authoritative human rights conventions or declarations which are out there. But before we do that, there was a document produced by organization Global Rights for Women, Justice for Victims of Violence. And there's some important information in there, interesting information. I can share a little bit of that just to support some of my points. Identify the fact that the Bahamas is one of five countries in the Caribbean currently that does not have laws against spousal or marital rape. So the Bahamas is not unique, as I mentioned earlier. It also pointed to the fact in the discussion that historically in the United States, this too was an issue. The United States actually had a similar setup. However, due to incidents of rape in marital circumstances, you know, there were finally some changes. It was known that approximately 10 to 14% of women admitted to having been raped by their spouse, and approximately 33% of women admitted to having unwanted sexual relationship with their spouse. These laws have since been changed. This is referring to the United States. This came out of a report which was published in 2006. Another report published in 2009, well, an article in 2009 indicated that one in five, 20% of women aged 15 to 49 globally, we're not talking about the Bahamas at this point, globally experience physical or sexual abuse from a former or a current partner or spouse within the previous year. So 20% of women experienced that in 2018. This was published in 2019. And four in 10 countries criminalize marriage. So of all the countries in the world, just to give proper perspective, 40% of all the countries in the world criminalizes marital rape. So the Bahamas sits with the 60%. And in that regard, it is by no means unique. But should we be satisfied with that reality? It is a grouping which I don't think any country should want to be in. It's a grouping which I really believe that the Bahamas, with its constitution and the preamble to its constitution and the general democratic arrangements of the country and the general Christian movement within the shores of the Bahamas kind of dictates that you should not facilitate, you should not tolerate, you should not maintain a circumstance where there is the possibility, the overt possibility, explicit possibility of a man or a woman being abused marriage. And as a result of that, the individual who, all things being equal, if he was sitting in one of those 40% country, would be tried, found guilty, and sent to jail. But in this instance, in the Bahamas, he gets a pass because the law exempts him. That is not a nice place to be. I don't believe so. And I don't believe that those in leadership, whether they are in the church or in important and strategic organization within the country, whether they sit in parliament, I don't believe at their core they believe this. But for some reason, reasons unknown or reasons unfathomable to me, there seem not to be the will to make the change. And it therefore begs the question, why? And for all of those other countries that make up the 60%, you know, some of them, you got to, we have to, you know, properly contextualize because they believe in different things. You know, they're not all Christian grounded like we are. But to the extent that we are, and to the extent that in many instances we have major leaders, pastors and politicians who actually lead with their Christian self, public, to the extent that we do that often, boldly and openly, but still hold on to this type of arrangement, I believe is a challenge. I believe is a fundamental challenge. And so it shows and it demonstrates, based on the statistics that I just read, the 1 in 5, 20%, the 4 in 10, 40% of the countries, it shows that this whole issue of marital rape is actually a global problem. It's not a Bahamas problem. It's not a problem for the Caribbean. It's a global problem. And so Section 15 of the Bahamas Sexual Offenses Act does do something else. So we have one section which defines what rape is. But we also have Section 15, which is very, very interesting. And we'll talk about that when we come back from the break, because it gives another side, another perspective to this whole issue. Because somewhere in the back of the minds, my words, my thinking, the drafters were saying, you know something? Even though we exempt them up at the top, right? I'm not totally 100% cool that there should be no penalties. There should be no obligation. There should be no criminal liability. So let's do this. So in Section 15, they did some things. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to show how maybe this exemption can be viewed as being egregious simply by using Section 15 itself, the same act, in the same piece of legislation, to demonstrate what happened, the action is proven. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. If you want to join in on the conversation, you have a comment, a suggestion, a question, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We are discussing marital rape, but we are looking at it from a human rights perspective. And we are drilling down in the legislation and the relevant part of the Sexual Offenses Act to show, or at least to provide a perspective as to why this thing needs to be changed. Don't move. Come right back. Essentials.
this has been a special episode of the...
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/caribbean.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-230 packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm Hubert Edwards. You're on Guardian 96.9 FM. And we're having a dialogue. I'm sharing perspective, and I'm hoping to hear from some of you on this particular topic. I'm seeking to take a little bit of a more studied approach to it, to the extent that I can study and understand this. And just to flip the perspective and ask some question as to why is this in a more significant way, the national sensibilities? Why isn't there a groundswell? Why isn't there a uprising? Why aren't persons calling in and saying this must stop? Not calling in necessarily to me, but calling into the powers that be and say we have to make a change. Why would in 2022, this exemption become defensible? Why? How can it be reasonable in 2022, given all that we have gone through over the decades, the fight for civil rights, the fight for human rights, the fight for the equality of the sexes, the fight for equal pay, the fight for just about everything for persons who have been marginalized or find themselves in what's referred to as minority grouping, and because women represent the largest segment or proportion of victims as it relates to marital rape, and they too are, in many instances, referred to as minorities or vulnerable groupings. Why would we not be seeking to hear a different type of a view, a different tune being played on this particular matter? Why? And of all the things, that's the aspect which bothers me the most as an individual, as a person. When I listen to learned individuals, experienced individual who sit in position of great influence, actually defend this, and they're not playing, they're not pretending, they believe the defense. They seriously and fundamentally believe, when they look you dead in the eye, piercing through your soul, and tell you it's impossible. Absolutely impossible for, the argument usually go, a man to rape his wife. Not possible. Again, you know, I know there's a bias here because we always lean to the side of greater impact. But of course, it ought to be gender neutral because same could happen to a woman raping a man. She may need some help. She may need to induce him. She may need to do something just because of physicality and difference. Or maybe she's just big and stronger than he is and she don't need no help. So the question is, why aren't we hearing an outcry and why is this considered defensible? That bothers me. It's an interesting question. And it's one which, especially individuals who I may be familiar with, when I listen to them, I can honestly say that an individual who defends this, and I hear them, I see them completely different. Absolutely, totally, and irrevocably different. Now, if that makes me a bad person, and if that makes me unlike, but you defend this, I don't see you as the same person, especially a male. A woman defends it, yeah, I have the same feeling too, but just figure, you know, something not clicking right there. You're not getting it. Shouldn't be defensible. But let's look at Section 15. What does Section 15 say? Section 15 deals with this whole idea of sexual assault. And it says that any person who has sexual intercourse with his spouse without the consent of the spouse. So remember the first section said, in defining the criminal act of rape, it says an individual who has sexual intercourse with anyone except his spouse. Subsection 1 of Section 15 starts off by saying any person who has sexual intercourse with his spouse, so it's now specifically focusing on the married couple, with his spouse, without the consent of the spouse, where there is in existence in relation to them a decree nisi of divorce. So they're going through a divorce, not totally separated, but some judgment has been given, a decision has been made at a court. There is a decree of judicial separation, so that's totally moving along. There is a separation agreement or for an order of a court for the person not to molest or cohabit with his spouse or any other order made under Part 2. Or notice that a petition for judicial separation, divorce, or nullity of marriage has been presented to a court is guilty of the offense of sexual assault by spouse and liable to imprisonment for a term of 15 years. Here is why this section is absolutely important to take a serious look at. So basically, two individuals going through what they're going through and they're on their way to be separated. So technically, they're not legally separated. This particular section says, you, the individual, if you have sexual intercourse without consent, which would, under normal circumstance, amount to rape. But if you did that under these circumstances, we are going to find you guilty of sexual assault as opposed to rape. Even when these people are divorcing, they're in the process, advanced process of divorce. The court, based on the law, will recognize the fact that the act has been done, but would be absolutely limited to, at best, finding this individual guilty only of sexual assault, not rape. Think about it. When you put those two sections together in the same piece of legislation, it says to you, that something isn't clicking right here. The Sexual Offenses Act, and again, it's not unique, but has gone out, and we have to put it within the context of modern day living, was written a while back. But it has really gone above and beyond to really exempt individuals from really egregious acts. The same action taken between two lovers who have been living together for the last 30 years. One of those spouses, whosoever is the aggressor, whosoever is the perpetrator, is going to jail for rape. But in the instance of there being a spousal relationship, not so. This makes it a very, very tricky thing to understand as far as I'm concerned. And why many times when there is a call for a change, I believe that it cannot simply be limited to just talking about, this is the wrong thing to do. We have to go to the root of the issue, and I think the root of the issue is for the Bahamas, because we are focusing on the Bahamas. Does the Bahamas as a country wish to be seen as a state actor which facilitates this type of behavior? Which the persons who pass the legislation, I don't think, they're not out there actively telling people to do this. But you and I know that legislation are designed to solve certain mischief. They are targeted at particular mischief. And in this case, the mischief is rape, the Sexual Offenses Act. But in the case of married persons, with an exception, with an exemption. And in the case of Section 15, my view, a watered-down effect of an individual who has been found guilty of rape. Why would the Bahamas want to be reflected in this light? Why would any country want to be reflected in this light? Why would a country that holds on to and projects Christian principles want to be reflected in this light? I think these are important questions for consideration. So the motivation, the impetus for the change ought to go deeper than just what it is. Blocking a criminal action. Go deep to the recognition that in the process, in the act, or creating that system of blocking criminal liability, we are wreaking violence on the human rights of individuals as a country. And we would want to, or we should want to change that. As God-fearing people, as Christian people, as Christian-minded individual, as individual who attaches ourselves to the old idea that, generally speaking, I am my brother's keeper and sister's keeper. Shouldn't we want to do that? Shouldn't we want to be seen amongst the minority countries in this case, where 40% of countries in the world criminalizes this? Isn't this one of the places where our Christian standards should naturally push us? Without reservation, without rationalization, without seeking to defend, to run away from, to justify, make excuses? Shouldn't that be the case? Shouldn't it be? So since we're talking about human rights, let's take a look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and see what sort of relationship that this may have to what we are discussing. Because the points I've made earlier, if they are to hold, given the way the world works, given the structure of laws where you have domestic law, you have international laws and conventions to which we are all parties to, voluntarily in all instances, really. If those points I made earlier are to hold, then there need to be some common thread. There need to be some justification in this Universal Declaration of Human Rights which support the points I've been making. There has to be at least a sliver of something which speaks to that. And that's what I'm trying to kind of eke out in this moment. So if you take a look at it, the preamble says, whereas recognition of the inherent dignity, and I'm underlining that word, dignity of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family, that would be man and woman, is the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace in the world. I like the word dignity in that sentence. Because while it may not have the same legal force as the act itself, think about what marital rape is alleged. Isn't it a violence on the individual's dignity? Isn't it treating that individual in ways which are, you know, not dignified? Wouldn't that individual dignity come under pressure in a harmful way, very, very harmful way, sometimes absolutely destructive way? So as a basis for looking at the efficacy of the section of the act, the Sexual Offenses Act, which defines rape, we ask the question, does that exemption meet the benchmark of being dignified or according dignified status to an individual, given the fact that the Constitution requires and demands, well, not require, demand is a better word, demands that there is protection by the law. The fact that that exemption is there results in no protection in that instance. And would that be dignified? No, is an easy answer. So that's the preamble. It further goes on to say, a part of the preamble, whereas it is essential, if man is not to be compelled to have recourse as a last resort to rebellion against tyranny and oppression, the human right should be protected by the rule of law. So one would say to us, and I would totally agree, that we must respect the rule of law. No man is above the law. Every person is subjected to the law. And the exemption doesn't breach this principle in strictest sense, because everyone who is in that particular circumstance is subject to the law equally. But there is this thought in the back of my mind that, you know, if you were to take Joe Blow on the bus coming from, you know, uptown to downtown as a standard bearer of the objective view of a man, he's unmarried. If he was to carry out certain act, he would go to jail for that, right? But if another person with a different status did it, then he would not. It would seem to me that we could really, really bend this argument to say that there are some persons who have been squeezed out of the true impact of the rule of law as it relates to that particular action because they are being exempted from criminal liability for no other reason than the fact that they're married. They don't even have to love the person. They don't even have to be happy together. Usually, if you're going to rape your wife or rape your husband, chances are you're not happy together. But for no other reason than the fact that they are married differentiates them, puts them above criminal prosecution for that particular offense. So whereas the people have in the Charter reaffirmed their faith in the fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, and in the equal rights of men and women, and have determined to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. Certainly, for persons who wish to endeavor in this adventure of marriage, with the risk that things could go wrong, the removal of that exemption should, by easy analysis, facilitate a better standard of life for them, just in case it went wrong. The maintenance of the exemption makes life worse for those people and could put them in a state of living hell. So think about it through the human rights lens. And then ask ourselves, is this where we want to be? Article 1 of the Declaration says, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in spirit of brotherhood. Is this piece of legislation, that exemption, the epitome of brotherhood? Is it? Is there an argument to be made that as the protector of or seeking to regulate social interaction between individuals, is this particular exemption facilitating brotherhood in a serious way? And I'm serious about the question. Is it? On the essentials. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
I differ with you on a number of points.
Go ahead.
Quickly. One, I see marriage, raping, as we put it, can be a violent act, but it's not the same as someone getting raped on the street.
Hold on. Okay. We are going to have a conversation, and every point you make which I disagree with, I'm going to be very, very clear, and I'm going to disagree with you. It is the exact same thing.
But you won't let me make my case, though.
It is the exact same thing.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, okay, let me tell you why, for example. Because why it's not the same exact thing. One, there is an implicit, when you get married, there's an implicit expectation of sex. That's why the law, I believe, when that was written, I'm not saying that I agree with men forcing themselves. However,
hold on. Let's have
so
a reasoning.
Hold on, caller. There's no implicit expectation of sex.
Hold on, caller. I'm sorry. I know I'm jumping in on you, but I want to just show my points. Is there an implicit expectation of sex or an implicit expectation of voluntary consensual sex?
No, I don't believe that. Okay, yes, you could call it voluntary. Yes.
No.
I'll throw that there.
I need an absolute answer. Is it an expectation of implicit, voluntary, and consensual sex, or just sex?
I would say voluntary. However,
okay.
I'm saying that because of the sake of I'm saying you can't put it in the same category as a rape, but you got to charge that person. Yes, there is possible sex, but not in the way we see rape. And that's all I'm really trying to harp on. I'm not saying force is not violent and wrong. Okay, I'm just simply saying I can't treat that husband who might have did that to his wife because the circumstance, and one is part of the law, I don't know if you remember, when it was written, when they were pushing it, they were saying if you were actually in the act and the woman said no and you didn't stop, you were guilty of rape. That's the extreme thing that's really a challenge.
Here's my rebuttal to that, right? Let's not rationalize how this thing happened. Let's assume that something happened. And on analysis after the fact, right? On the preponderance of the evidence, it is proven that the man did do it. I'm not talking about where the woman withdraw consent at maybe what men would consider to be an inappropriate time, you know, just way too far. When it was actually done in such a way where it really, really constitute an abusive and egregious act, you are saying you are fine with the exemption? Are you saying that?
Hold on. If you're saying that they were having that he forced himself on his wife,
yes,
I'm saying that's very difficult to prove. Unlike someone who have no connection with each other.
No, but that's not a point. But that's not a point. That's not a point I'm making.
Uh-huh.
I'm saying to you that if it is proven, if it is proven, even though there's difficulty, we're talking about degrees here. But if it is proven, what should happen to him?
I wouldn't treat him the same way. Yes, he did something. Okay, I would say yes, he forced someone. I don't like
Man,
that.
You have to be crazy.
I don't like that.
I'm sorry.
But he shouldn't get the same.
What are you talking about?
Huh?
What are you talking about?
These are two married persons.
And
the brother.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm going to, before you hang up on me, right?
No, I'm not going to hang up on you. I'm not going to hang up on you. I want to engage with you because your views represents a general position out there, which I think is informing too significantly, too influentially, the thinking around this whole matter. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
Yeah, but even women, and that's why you will find women and all will tell you that they, and I probably should have gone back to the biblical, which is my foundation, right? The biblical stance, and I'm talking about the four, but the biblical description of marriage, for those who follow it, those who don't follow it, I understand. But those who follow it, is essentially, I've given up my individual rights to you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
As a person in this sense, not as an individual existing, but it's a share, it's like we are one in this metaphysical, where we share response. I am yours, you are mine.
So,
and that's the same thing with my sex. My wife go on my blessed, I had my money.
So, Carla.
If my wife go and use my money, I must go to the court and say, the wife take my money?
No, Carla.
And she use it up?
Carla.
Go ahead. Uh-huh.
If you were to stop talking to me right now and pull, this is going to be a little bit maybe rough for some people. But you were to pull out your kitchen knife and chop off one of your finger, right?
Uh-huh.
Would you be open to prosecution?
If I chop off my own finger?
Yeah, knife? Yeah.
No.
If you were to do the same thing to your wife, would you be open to prosecution?
I think so, yeah.
So what is the difference between one criminal obligation and another criminal obligation?
You said
you were one, right? How can you be chopping off somebody else's finger, which you are one with, and you're now faced with criminal prosecution when you shouldn't be faced with criminal prosecution if you rape the woman?
I understand, but to be fair now, in that description of that oneness, there is a specific emphasis on sexual relationships.
Where's the authority for this?
Punch up his wife, right? He beat and abused his wife. Mm-hmm. That's a different matter. But when we, again, the biblical context for us who follow it is that, and again, we are not the four. If we do, I expect some kind of punishment, but I'm not.
Okay.
But when we say aggravated, we put it in this rape category, all right? And we mix it with two people who have a guy who runs down tonight and does that. He has no relation to it. To me, that is two different matters. And so that's why I accept that, yes, it was possible, but it doesn't rise to that level. And, you know, so that's where we...
I would come off.
Let me add one other thing.
Before you add the other thing, I just want to ask you, and you fundamentally believe that.
What's that?
What you just said.
Yeah, I mean, whatever I told you, that's what I believe. I said, I believe, except for whatever exclusion I made.
All right. Go ahead to the second one. We have some other callers, so we want to get them in quickly. Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks. And then lastly, you said that, the law is prejudicial. I think you were kind of like making the case that the law, certain things, that the law shouldn't be prejudicial to a woman who now becomes married.
Yeah.
But the law actually is prejudicial in a lot of ways. For example, the gambling, Bahamas hangover, and that's accepted.
Yeah.
A person who goes to his lawyer can't make that lawyer tell you what the person said. You can't drag that lawyer to court.
I understand that.
But if he told me that in the street, they could demand that I do that.
Exactly.
I do it, but they won't demand his lawyer or some psych, some person who you see is because clients. Privilege, so the law is prejudicial.
No, you are right, and I'm aware that there are many instances. The purest lawyers or the purest legal scholars would explain to you that it's not prejudicial; it's just a provision, and it is what it is. But I believe that in this instance, given the different treatment between, say, a common law relationship or a boyfriend girlfriend relationship, we should look at it differently.
Well, let me leave you at this one, and then you could. I'll hang up.
Okay.
So what happens? So when a woman does deny him sex, he doesn't go to court now. He's this man trying to save his marriage. Or when she just uses up his account, right? She uses him and abuses him, but not physically.
Right.
But we don't make no case about that. And lastly, you, other than this woman who made this claim,
maybe
there's statistics to say that married women are being raped. I don't believe it.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. All right. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on The Essentials. We lost that person. Sorry, we want you to call back. Took up a little bit more time than anticipated. So let's get into the second article. The second article says, everyone is entitled to all rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind. This is the one I wanted to bring forward to you. Remember I said earlier that the Constitution is based on race, creed, sex, color, that type of a thing, right? And I believe that we could squeeze in the differentiation between marital status in this. But it's not that clear. But I believe I could. But I said that because I know I was going to come to this point. Article 2 of the United Nations Declaration says, everyone is entitled to all rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. I propose to you, I put forward to you that marital status fits into this other status. And as a result of that, under the Human Rights Declaration, because there is a distinction based on spouse or based on marriage, this is running counter, or there is at least some level of friction between that piece of legislation and this article in the Human Rights Declaration. It's me, again, I'm not a legal scholar. I read things and I try to absorb them as best as I can. And I'm open to be told, I'm open to be told that this is totally wrong and persons would correct me and tell me exactly why it is. But based on what I am seeing here before me, it is saying that other status, single married, male, female, live uptown, live downtown, different status. I believe that this covers that. And the fact that there is that exemption creates a tension between what the intended rights accorded under the human rights, the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, which flows into the quote-unquote Bill of Rights of the Bahamas. And therefore, it ought to be, if my argument holds, solvable on this basis. It should be. Article 3 said everyone has a right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Everyone has a right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Now, especially the person, the one we just spoke to, not the one that didn't get through, we want to hear back from you. Would you disagree that an individual who has been forced, who finds themselves in a situation where there is sexual intercourse without consent, consistently, in an arrangement where there is an impenetrable shield around any force, external force, to stop that, except, you know, you move away physically and do some other things, right? In that circumstance, would you disagree that that individual's security of person is being violated? Would you? And if you agree that Article 3 of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights called for the security of person, and if you have a piece of legislation where an individual in an arrangement who is an aggressor can be protected by certain things, would result or is tantamount to that individual personal security being violated. So again, my argument, I'm willing to hear others, is simply this. The fact that, as the man explained, you know, it's different. It's seen as different. It's not the same as, you know, a nice dog in my yard and the dog bite me. It's totally different from if a stranger, I'm walking on the street and a stranger dog bite me. That's how he sees it. He can't align the fact that a total stranger being aggressive to an individual in a sexual way can be compared to somebody who's known, a husband, a wife. Can't be the same. Not in his mind. Not in the minds of many persons. It's totally different because there is this presumption, there is this expectation that the act of sex is going to take place. And because it's going to take place, it must take place. But should it? Shouldn't it not be voluntary? Consistently. And that is where I depart from many persons. Because there is an element of, and I respect persons' view, I'm not opposed to you thinking in religious terms. But I honestly don't believe, I'm going to say this very clear, I honestly don't believe that Jesus of the Bible would condone that type of a behavior. Absolutely, unequivocally, no. If you argue that with me, and you come down on the side which says, Jesus would stand by your bedside and be comfortable with you forcing your wife or your husband to have sex, and he would say, I bless you, my child. I would have just a couple of words for you. Depart from me, because I don't want to be in your presence. And if you look at it through that lens, and you can actually rationalize and walk away feeling comfortable that it is okay, that Jesus the Christ would endorse that particular action, I think you have a problem. I think you have a very, very fundamental problem. A very serious problem. A problem such that it ought to make the argument for the exemption to be removed such that you can be escorted to a place where you are no longer a problem to yourself and to others. Seriously. And I believe that. I'm 100% committed to that statement, just like my friend who called me earlier is committed to the position that he put forward. We have to start to think not simply from a legal perspective. We understand if this is about morals, the law is not the epitome of morals. We know that. If this is about religion, then we have to get down to the basics and start to ask ourselves some really, really critical question as to where in this is the definition of love, of care? Where in this is behavior which can be characterized as being Christ-like? Where? If you can't draw those conclusions, if you cannot draw, then what you're doing, if you're doing it, is wrong and you know it. What you're defending is wrong and you ought to know it. Not everyone who defends these things really, I don't think they're involved. But some of them are just scared. They hear great stories about the woman did this or the man did that, da 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 da. Just like the man, the caller earlier said, the woman clean out his account. So what? That sounds like extortion or thiefing, not something else. That don't give you the right to do something else. We need to start asking ourselves some fundamental questions. And on this particular issue, all I'm suggesting here is that we flip the conversation and we start to think about it, not simply through the lens as we have done so far up to now, but let's start to consider whether or not we are in the business of not providing adequately for the human rights of individuals in marital relationships. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm Hubert Edwards, and I want you to join me on the other side of this break. When we come back, if you wish to make a call, a comment, or a question, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. You can give us a shout. Don't move. Come right back.
This has been a special episode of
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/caribbean.
The Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. Having a good conversation. We had a great call, good input, the points, but they are his points nonetheless, and we're respectful of those. I just believe that it's a matter worthy of open and honest discussion. And so, you know, whatsoever your views are, say it. We will agree or we'll agree to disagree. But I think it's fundamental, it's important. In my mind, it's a little bit of a black eye on the country and all those countries that maintain it. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling to support that male caller that called in.
Okay.
What we have to distinguish, let's stipulate that rape does occur in marriage, whether it's violent or nonviolent. All it takes is non-consent. But it can't be that a husband, in a non-violent way, misunderstands his wife, and she calls it rape. She's still in the home, stay in there, and we treat him the same as a criminal. I think that's the point that Paula was making.
But the fundamental point I am making is slightly different. I think we have in a bit of a nuanced discussion. I'm saying to you, not what you describe. I'm saying to you that it is proven on the preponderance of the evidence that what he did or she did actually amounts to rape. The question is, should he be exempted? Should she be exempted?
No, they shouldn't be exempted. And but that's the definition of rape is simply non-consent.
Yes,
it
but...
It doesn't go to degree or anything like that.
Good.
Now, let us prove... Now, you're saying it's proven, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many... What stops a woman from coming forward or leaving the marriage to say that her husband, he may be violent towards her.
Mm-hmm.
There may be considerations for the children.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of taking it in our minds, that's how you're coming across, the same as a stranger rape, non-violent, right? But rape is rape. Why not treat it differently in a different court, a family court, which will encourage more women to come forward, who are, you know, probably going to be ashamed to come forward in the first instance, right?
So why,
we need
though?
To think of it differently.
No.
You
no,
can't
no.
tell me. I'm a woman.
I know you're a woman, and I'm not in any way challenged in that position. And, of course, I can tell you my view. You just told me yours, didn't you?
Right. Yes.
I am saying to you...
I'm trying to say to you why it won't work based on and why you're having this issue is because you guys are looking at it from the same perspective as you would treat a stranger rape. And we who are in that situation, if we are married, don't see it that way. We're saying,
let me ask you a question, ma'am. Mm-hmm. If a stranger murdered a woman...
No.
I'm asking you this.
If a strange my husband just and I just tell him no, I just don't want none tonight.
No.
But I don't tell him no.
No, you. I understand that there's no consent, right? And if there is an alleged situation, the man has a legal obligation to abide by the law. If you said no. Not tonight. And then he went ahead and, you know, did what he have to do. And if you are not aggrieved, then you will be fine, wouldn't you?
No, but if you are aggrieved and you go to the court and the proven that he raped you, the question to me is, how is the court going to prove that? Because all of the elements of, say, a stranger rape, will naturally be found in the marriage bed. So the next question becomes, well, why are you still in the marriage?
Now, so you see, what you're discussing is the degree of difficulty in proving.
No, I'm discussing your point. You're asking why 60% of the people go in one way versus the 40%. And I'm trying to show you the thinking. And it's not for you guys who think differently to think that, oh, we cave man and cave woman, religious mentality, because I'm not even religious. And I'm not even coming from a religious perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you why 60% of the people feel a particular way. Yes, rape occurs. Yes, it happens. But
you don't believe it should be punished? Or it should be punished differently?
I never said that. I said the court should treat it differently. Whatever punishment you arrive at, it could be the same. But it should not be treated the same way in the same court. Because it won't encourage women to come
forward.
Okay,
so you are seeking to have an environment where there's greater privacy.
Greater privacy,
yeah.
To encourage women to come forward.
Okay.
And you can't just simply say, oh, I said no, and he went ahead.
Okay.
You can't do that.
Right, that's fine. I can agree with that. But you would therefore have to agree that in order for you to come to a conclusion in the more private environment, there would still need to be a removal of the exemption, wouldn't there be?
Yes.
Okay. That's all we're saying. We're on the same page. Believe me, we are on the same page.
Yeah, but you discourage people from speaking out. Because it amazes me. I've heard no discussions about this. No women are even talking about it in the office, nowhere.
Right.
I'm like, this don't concern you?
Yeah. It's concerning that there's so much quietness from my perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate your input. We have a couple of texts here. It says, "When you married, does that mean you as an individual lose your right? You are still human and entitled to your rights." A, I agree with that. I don't think so. You said yes. I agree with you. Our constitution says so. Rape is rape. It is violent act. Married or not, rape is rape. You continue. A lot of people think that the gentleman. Think like that, gentleman, and he's wrong, So you were referring to the caller earlier. If you have to force your spouse, then obviously there is a problem already in the marriage. Violence is not acceptable, and definitely God would not approve of that. Sorry. These people are missing the point. You said that the act was proven. They don't get it. That's kind of the point I'm making, Texas. Mr. Edwards, the Bahamas should want to be in the majority, 60% Christian principle. Well, the 60% is the bad majority, actually, Texter. They should want to be in the 40%. So Christian principle should be to maintain marriage and is there any host at Guardian Radio that ever strongly disagree with the status quo? What do you mean? You all always pushing these wrong agenda on us. What's wrong about what I'm discussing? Agenda on us. What are we progressing to, sir? What is the goal? Well, you tell me. Tell me exactly what it is and why is that an agenda which has been pushed on you? Maybe you are uncomfortable. Maybe. I don't know. But all I'm expressing to you is a matter which has been discussed, which is prevailing in the country, and just needs to be looked at differently. So let me wrap up. We only have 2 minutes to go. So finally, this week, we had a UN, United Nations representative, who came in and made some statement. And I just want to draw your attention to something here as we end this, right? So as reported in the Nassau Guardian, it says that the Bahamas has signed on to the CEDAW, the Convention for the Elimination of Violence, of all type of violence against women, and the Bahamas has signed on to that since October 1993. That particular convention sets a standard, a requirement for the criminalization of marital rape, and the Bahamas has not done so. She said CEDAW is one of the only convention that identifies quite clearly that it is, that its principle is state obligation. So each state that ratifies CEDAW is supposed to take the international standard and make it into law. We know that there are nuances. We know that there are challenges. We know that there are discussion. If you just listen to the calls that we have this evening, you would see where we're going. So it's not easy. But the fact of the matter is that there is an obligation to do it. And I believe, based on the points I have set out here tonight, subject to me being wrong, I am convinced that there is a basis in law, in international law, in conventions of which we are, as a country member, we signed up to voluntarily. We have an obligation to change that. The final point I want to draw to you is Article 8 of the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights, which says everyone has the right to an effective remedy by the competent national tribunals, courts, for acts violating the fundamental rights granted to him by the Constitution or by the law. The last thing I want to say on that is I think we are very competent courts. But this, in this particular instance, in the case of rape in a marital arrangement, the exemption takes away from the competent tribunal the power to provide fair and equitable punishment for those persons. You've been listening to The Essentials. All I want to say to you here is be good, walk good, think good. And always think about the other person. Always think about what it is that we are doing, which might be perfectly legal, but at a fundamental level, we are hurting, we are robbing, we are suppressing the human rights of our brothers and sisters. We always like to end by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. Good night.